From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo says he will back a pay raise for the legislature. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the sentencing of the former head of SUNY Poly, Elaine Calleros, for bid rigging. And U.S. Senator Gillibrand wants to end the use of PFAS chemicals at commercial airports. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo says he backs a pay commission's recommendation that he and the legislature receive a more than 60% pay increase over the next 3 years, which would make Cuomo the highest paid governor in the nation. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Under the recommendations of the Pay Commission released Monday evening, the pay of state senators and assembly members would increase from the current $79,500 base salary to $110,000 on January 1st, rising to $130,000 a year by January of 2021. Governor Cuomo, speaking on WNYC's The Brian Lehrer Show, says lawmakers deserve their first pay raise in 20 years.
Look, we want to get talented people into the legislature. You have to pay them a salary that allows them to live and not be a martyr.
The commission also recommends that the governor's pay be increased from $179,500 a year to $250,000 by 2021. That would be the highest governor's salary in the nation. Cuomo says he isn't concerned about the amount of his own salary, saying his job is not about the money, but he says he does want to be able to better compensate state agency commissioners. He says the stagnant salaries have made it difficult for him to attract top talent to the posts.
I have to hire commissioners who are in charge of multi-billion dollar agencies.
State agency commissioners and public authority heads would be eligible for salaries of up to $220,000 a year by January 1, 2021. The Pay Commission also recommends some reforms. One, that outside income for legislators be strictly limited to 15% of their total government salaries. That's similar to current rules in Congress. Two former leaders of the legislature face prison time for illegal actions involving outside pay. And the commission says the number of stipends paid to members in leadership posts and on committees should be reduced from the over 150 now to just 15, 9 in the Assembly and 6 in the Senate. The commission's report also warns that if the state budget is not approved in both houses of the legislature by the April 1 deadline each year, the raises will be rescinded. The commission believes it has the power to set those conditions based on language in the law establishing the pay panel. That language says any salary increases will be conditioned upon performance of the executive and legislative branches and also upon timely passage of the budget. Blair Horner with the government reform organization, the New York Public Interest Research Group, says while the wording is somewhat ambiguous, lawmakers did vote in favor of the measure during the budget process earlier this year.
The lawmakers voted for it, and I'm sure that this is one section of the budget that they all read. So what did they think was going to happen when they tied it to performance? That they were going to go to the gym more? Who knows what they were thinking?
Horner says he thinks the commission has the power to go even further and recommend more reforms that include the executive branch, which has had its share of scandals. Several former associates of Governor Cuomo have been sentenced to prison for participating in bribery and pay-to-play schemes. The incoming Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins says Democrats, who will control the chamber in January, have the votes to enact at least one of the reforms to adopt limits on outside income. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, in testimony before the commission, said he did not want to link any legislation, though, even reform legislation, with the pay raise, saying any salary hike should stand on its own.
To agree to a specific piece of legislation in exchange for compensation is not something I'm even comfortable in doing. But I hear what people are saying, and I think that we've shown in the past that we've had an appetite to listen to reforms.
Hastie has not yet said what the assembly will do, but in a statement he said he would be guided by the principles of the independence and respect for the legislative branch, which he says are embedded in the New York State Constitution. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok.
Well, the former head, Alan, of the key economic development programs for Governor Andrew Cuomo, that's Elaine Calleros, including the Buffalo Billion, was sentenced to 3.5 years in prison by a federal judge yesterday, convicted in July of bid rigging and other corruption charges, also ordered to pay a $100,000 fine. Coincidentally, you spoke with Governor Cuomo yesterday, and you didn't shy away from asking him about this.
No, I didn't. I asked him, and he did what was expected. Basically, he said, the law is the law. So I did a follow-up question, and he just wasn't going to budge. Law is the law. That's why we have it. You know, his vulnerabilities are clear. He did have those guys, Joe Prococo and Todd Howe and others around him. And I think he knows that he can't play a hand in anybody's favor here. Now, the difference between Howe and Prococo and this situation is that Calleros had really no financial gain to come out of this. He was just doing what he thought the situation had called for. And the judge wasn't buying any of it because she basically signaled what she was going to do to some of his co-defendants, saying that they weren't as guilty as he was. So despite the fact that there's been some editorial comment here in the Times Union by our own friend Rick Smith and Fred LeBrun, which was sympathetic to Calleros, I have to say that what happened was what I expected to happen. Perhaps the judge doesn't read these columns.
You also spoke with him about the pay raise for state legislators, the governor, and he said he'd work for a dollar, but he has to get the raise for his surrounding folks.
I think he makes a point. When his health commissioner has to work for $130,000 compared to the people who are taking these huge jobs, and he says, look, I'm having trouble getting people to work for that kind of money, basically. I think that is a good point. I've had less sympathy for the legislature and their raises, David, based on the fact that I don't think that all of them work very hard. Some do, but some don't. You know, the idea that outside income would be prohibited, to me, seems like exactly the right thing to do. We all know that people are going to spend money with legislators as a sort of legal bribery. There's no question about it.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand is calling on the Trump administration to implement a law to help end the use of PFAS chemicals at commercial airports. The junior senator from New York says it's time to bring awareness that airports can switch to firefighting foam free of toxic fluorinated chemicals. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn has more.
Prior to the law passed a few months ago, Gillibrand says commercial airports were required to use PFAS in firefighting foams.
One of the biggest reasons why this particular chemical keeps leaking into our water is because it's one of the main ingredients in the firefighting foam that our airports have been required to use for putting out fires and for their fire safety training exercises. Up until 2 months ago, airports in New York and across the country were actually required to use firefighting foam that had PFAS in it because of an arbitrary regulation. There are many new types of firefighting foam on the market now that don't have PFAS in them.
President Trump signed the law in October as part of the Federal Aviation Administration reauthorization bill, but Gillibrand says the administration is dragging its feet on implementation, and most airports are unaware of the change.
The Trump administration is just sitting by while our communities continue to have their water contaminated by these chemicals. There is no excuse for this. The Trump administration needs to act now and tell airports about how they can access safer firefighting materials.
An FAA spokesperson did not respond in time for this broadcast. Gillibrand is specifically calling on the FAA to immediately make all commercial airports in the U.S. aware of the change in requirements for firefighting foam, prohibit the use of PFAS-containing foam for training purposes, and other actions. Dr. David Andrews is a senior scientist at Washington, D.C.-based Environmental Working Group.
So I think it's really important that Gillibrand put out this message and really this immediate call to action. That's what's needed. We know enough about these chemicals that we need to stop this as soon as possible.
Andrews has been investigating PFAS chemicals for more than a decade.
And really the big concern is when these foams are used for training exercises. They're often sprayed onto a runway or onto a field where they leach into the environment, the groundwater, and they could be there for decades or centuries or longer. And that's what's really been the main source of contamination across the country.
In general, he says there is uncertainty as to how toxic replacement chemicals for PFAS are. PFAS is a family of per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances that includes PFOS, a chemical that affected drinking water in Newburgh. In the summer of 2016, New York State designated Stewart Air National Guard Base in Newburgh a Superfund site after finding the source of PFOS contamination was the historic use of firefighting foam at the base. Gillibrand says she is dissatisfied with the pace toward the Department of Defense's cleanup at Stewart Air National Guard Base.
We just got them $170 million to do the work. Like, they need to be cleaning it up, and they certainly shouldn't be using any more PFAS foam.
Senior officials from the Department of Defense were in Newburgh mid-November, holding their first public forum since the PFOS contamination crisis hit more than 2 years ago. They said there are challenges with Stewart because it is an Air National Guard base and under different authorities than DOD's active duty bases. In June, New York State sued six manufacturers of hazardous firefighting foam that contained PFOA and/or PFOS. The lawsuit alleges that the foams used at military and civilian airports caused widespread contamination, as in the case of Newburgh. Meantime, a spokesman says the State Department of Health is looking to finalize a December date for a Drinking Water Quality Council meeting to recommend maximum contaminant levels for PFAS chemicals, such as PFOA and PFOS.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
The funeral for the 41st President of the United States was held last week in Washington. And while George Herbert Walker Bush leaves a mixed environmental legacy, Northern New York advocates say his tenure as president benefited the environmentally sensitive Adirondack region. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley explains.
The Clean Air Act was enacted in 1970. President George H.W. Bush signed a revised Clean Air Act in 1990. His cooperation with the late New York U.S. Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan to get amendments passed, according to Adirondack Council spokesman John Sheehan, was crucial for the Adirondacks.
Those brought us not only the acid rain program that helped to reduce our pollution in the Adirondacks an enormous amount between 1995 and today, but it also brought us some changes in the way that the smog program operates and really brought the authorization for the cross-state pollution rule that continued to reduce our sulfur and nitrogen pollution here in the Adirondacks to the point where we're getting very close to being able to say that the damage being done by acid rain is over. We're not quite there yet, but we've made a lot of progress in the last 25, 30 years.
Adirondack Wild Friends of the Forest Preserve partner David Gibson agrees that the Clean Air Act amendments of 1990 were significant for the Northeast and the Adirondack Park.
In 4 years, he accomplished quite a bit. And we in the Adirondack Park, who are concerned about the Adirondack Park, can be grateful for his term in office because he took scientific consensus and research being done and applied that to public policy in the Clean Air Act amendments. And the results can be seen in the recovery of our lakes in the Adirondack Park. It's a stunning, stunning example of how science and regulatory policy can be married together successfully.
In 1992, President Bush attended the first International Summit on Climate Change in Rio de Janeiro and signed the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. Yet Ethan Allen Institute Vice President John McClory fears President Bush's environmental successes may be fleeting.
He had put the United States into the IPCC process and attended conferences, and that's certainly part of his political legacy. However, we've had three presidents since then, and I think whatever legacy he left us in 1992 has been seriously overtaken by events. And while we're paying tribute to George Bush, and deservedly, I don't really think the fact that he supported the initial stages of the climate movement back in 1990 and 91 are going to have any lasting effect.
Sheehan says Bush's actions in office led to a nearly 93% reduction in sulfur dioxide and an almost 85% reduction in nitrogen oxide from coal-fired power plants.
So we've seen lakes recover, we have seen loons return to waters, and we're seeing heritage strain brook trout that we thought were extinct reemerging. We're not quite out of the woods yet, but his legacy is that he got the ball rolling on all of this good news.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics, I'm David Gustina. As police departments move toward transparent, community-oriented philosophies and practices, including embracing social media, the Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas takes an in-depth look now at how Capital Region police departments are using technology.
Accountability and transparency have come a long way since 1998, when Albany's Center for Law and Justice issued a research report entitled To Protect and Serve, with a question mark. Alice Green is executive director.
I think it was something like only 29% of people in inner city community, and particularly in the African-American community, believed that the police was without any bias. And so there was a real problem at that time. And historically, there has been a great difficulty of getting the community and the police to work together. But I think since 2010, things have changed dramatically in terms of the relationship between the Albany Police Department and the community. And the center itself was founded, you know, 13 years ago to address those relationships. And so we were very excited when the department got a new chief, Chief Krokoff, who was committed to community policing. It was a turning point because I think it affected the culture of the police department.
New York's Capital Region, led by the City of Albany under Chief Stephen Krokoff, began to have a significant impact on community-oriented policing, with several standards now being emulated by law enforcement agencies across the nation. In 2013, Albany was the only city in New York with a community policing program in place.
Transparency, of course, has improved dramatically. At one point, we were not able to get any information from the Albany Police Department.
By June 2015, Albany became the third U.S. city and the first in the Northeast to adopt LEAD, the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program, an innovative pre-booking diversion effort that empowers officers to redirect low-level offenders engaged in criminal activity involving things like prostitution or drugs to community-based services instead of jail and prosecution.
Also, LEAD has led to significant changes in training police officers, not only in harm reduction methods, but procedural justice. How do you approach people in the community with respect? And they've also been trained in implicit bias and problem-solving techniques.
In 2016, the U.S. Department of Justice named the APD one of 15 departments it would track in an effort to improve policing nationwide. The selection was made as part of President Obama's Task Force on 21st Century Policing, which in the previous year laid out recommendations and best practices for departments. APD has also worked to improve community relations with several initiatives, including pop-up barbecues, family movie nights, police and fire recruitment efforts, impromptu soccer or basketball games, and coffee with a cop. Albany Police spokesperson Steve Smith says the cookouts have been a big hit.
There are a surprise barbecue that we will post the day before an event where members of the Albany Police Department will cook hamburgers, hot dogs for members of the community. We'll show a movie, a kid-friendly movie, on a large inflatable screen that we have, and the officers can engage our youth by playing certain games. Sometimes we've had some games of kickball and things like that, so it's just a really good opportunity to just bring people together and build those meaningful relationships.
The city began rolling out officer body cameras in 2017 as Smith and other officers maintained an active social media presence that included Facebook, Twitter, and Nixley, an internet alert system activated in 2013. Crime Stoppers, launched in December 2017, opened a fast lane for police to receive tips anonymously from the public. Again, Green.
Body cams, of course, add some dimension to the accountability issue. I know that they're moving in the direction of improving relationships through the use of social media and also doing legal rights education with groups like the Center for Law and Justice.
Albany Police Chief Eric Hawkins, who took over the 300-member force in September after a 30-year police career in Michigan, recently opened a Twitter account and has become an avid poster.
My foray into this social media type environment, and I'm enjoying it so far.
In nearby Schenectady, Sergeant Matthew Deering says his department is cognizant of the presence of social media, home security systems, and people having cell phone cameras.
We assume and we tell our officers to assume that they are being recorded at all times by everyone.
Chief Hawkins notes technology and community policing go hand in hand. He says it's been a natural progression with smartphones ubiquitous among Albany residents and officers becoming comfortable with body cameras.
Officers are starting to see now that, in particular, with citizens' complaints and with assessing actions of officers after the fact, that in most instances, these recordings have exonerated officers and or they've shown to the public that some of the things that they may have heard about how officers behave or things they say or things they do are not necessarily true, and that these recordings have been a positive thing for our police officers. And so now we're starting to see that the officers are really embracing the technologies now that are being introduced into our industry.
Hawkins adds that many new technologies serve as behavior modifiers, which he says seem to bring out the best in both citizens and police officers because everyone realizes they're being documented. Sergeant Deering says the leap in technology is also beginning to impact the Schenectady Police Department. The 154-member force is currently testing different brands of body cameras.
So we are going to be getting them, and they are going to be rolled out in the near future. We're just completing our pilot test phase as for which vendor and which camera we're going to be using. We do, take a good look and review a lot of our policies, procedures, and protocols, you know, very regularly to make sure that we are on the, like I said, the advancement side of things, to make sure that we're not only keeping up with, but trying to stay ahead of ever-changing policing times.
Deering sees the changes in the way information is exchanged and disseminated as having a positive impact on law enforcement and transparency.
Times have changed. You know, you don't have to wait till the 6 o'clock news to tell everybody that a road is going to be closed. You can send that message out on various social platforms now, which is, you know, not only beneficial for a police department, but for everyone else as well.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1850. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.